So already the evening of our first day of this Sesshin, this retreat, please don't think that this is a three-week retreat, even if you have a plan to stay for 3 weeks. No need to think it's a 6-day or a 2-day or a 3-day. Of course, the mind wants to organize the world, and we make these distinctions, which are quite helpful in terms of family and friends and work obligations. But in some way, when we enter the door of the temple, when we come into the zendo and sit down, we enter the world of thusness, the world of here. And this world of here and now is constantly appearing and disappearing, constantly shape-shifting. And in this world of aliveness, nothing is guaranteed. All the plans we have may work out, may be similar to what we think, but we can't know for sure. Sometimes people who think they're staying for the whole retreat, something happens, and suddenly it's a 2-day retreat, not a 3-week retreat. Some people who thought they were coming tomorrow are now coming the next day. But no need to worry about that. I'm reminded of a week-long retreat I went on many years ago, where I had decided that the last night of retreat I would stay up all night and become enlightened. And I was really looking forward to it. One day, after many days, suddenly there was some kind of ceremony and people were talking. I said, "What's going on?" And they said, "The retreat's over." And I had miscounted the days and missed my golden opportunity for enlightenment. I was actually quite bitterly disappointed for a little while. And then, of course, at some point we see through our strategies, and maybe then we meet our disappointment maybe even with some gratitude. But I say this as we begin because already we are deep into it. A number of us have done many retreats here now at this temple, and those that are coming, maybe you're here for the first time, but as we join together, each of us, as we say, rowing our oar, something happens. The Sangha appears, this great river of practice that we have inherited. We are all stream enterers. We enter this stream of Dharma practice. We join with the women and men of generation after generation who have gathered together, who have seen the wisdom of doing nothing together. We say alone together. And this is how we are as humans. Each one of us living in our own universe, each one of us co-creating this dependent co-arising of life, and yet each of us together, each of us doing our best, And so just maybe now a few words about the Gatha of Atonement as we pick out different pieces from our new liturgy book. I wanted to highlight this partly because we've made one small change in it. So all evil karma ever created by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, I vow to atone for it all. And that last line is subtly shift for, it used to be, now I atone for it all. And now it's, I vow to atone for it all. And this Gatha of Atonement is also known as the Gatha of Repentance. And it is part of our precept ceremony, the taking of the precepts. There are 16 bodhisattva precepts in the Zen tradition. And they are seen as, we might say, guideposts for living a life of practice. And there are the three refuges which we chant every morning. I take refuge in Buddha, I take refuge in Dharma, I take refuge in Sangha. And the three pure precepts to avoid evil, practice good, and to save all beings. And then the ten grave precepts. But in the ceremony, before we enter into any of the precepts, we always do this Gatha of Atonement, this repentance Gatha. And this Gatha is an acknowledging of the web of life. And acknowledging that though we would always wish to be helpful and kind, as we were saying this morning, though we would wish that, of course we don't always behave that way. And it says, all evil karma ever created by me. And evil in this sense, not so much a moral category, but maybe harmful or hurtful. And karma, from the Zen perspective, not so much some fixed sentence for life, but the karma is this web of causes and conditions. The karma is are the circumstances of our life, and everything we do and everything we don't do has consequences. But it is all so mysterious and deep and intertwinkled, we might say, so woven together that we can't know what the consequences of any action are. And we can't know all the causes and conditions and actions and choices that led us here this evening. And there is no escape from this web of causality. This is what it means to be a human being. And this means that though we would wish to cause no harm, we will cause harm, and we do cause harm. We cause harm sometimes knowingly, so angry, so lost that maybe we lash out at those we love, lash out at those we don't know. So there is that, and there, of course, there is that even when we think we are doing something good, we don't know. These causes and conditions. And so in this chant and in our practice, we bow down. We acknowledge that the greed, anger, and ignorance, that it rise, they rise. These conditions of life rise endlessly. We are not in the business of eliminating greed, anger, and ignorance. You can try as you like. But these rise endlessly, and the question is, how do we meet them? If we try to fight them, we will lose. If we try to suppress them, eventually they will get so compressed and hot and energetic, they will take over. So how do we meet the arising of these fires? Sometimes they're called the three poisons, but I think maybe just the three arisings are better. This is what it means to be a human, is that we are reactive. Something happens, and then we react. We want more of it. We want less of it. We space out. This is what it means to be human. And so in our practice, we are learning to be human, to allow what is here to be here. Not that we allow it to run the show and control our actions and act out. We are learning to sit upright in the middle of this reactivity. As we do that, then we see that there is no substance to this reactivity. The greed and the anger and the ignorance come and go, just like clarity and peacefulness. Come, this is the weather coming and going. We see how we take action based on our greed, wanting more, or on our anger, ignorance. We speak from this place, which also has an impact. So these words, every word we say, reverberates, and we can't take it back. Whatever we say is said. And then this gatha reminds us too that our thoughts create karma. Our thoughts have consequences. And this can lead us to maybe thinking we need to be mind police and only repeat positive phrases to ourselves. But I think this is rather the intention to be aware. As Laura said this morning, that sometimes we can choose. Sometimes we're just carried away by the thoughts of resentment or whatever. But sometimes we notice, lost in thought, and we can come back to this breath, to this moment. And this is the vow we make. So I vow to atone for it all. We might say, I vow to return to what I love. I vow to return to what I love. I vow to open my heart to the fullness of this moment. And this is our practice, this waking up, seeing that we have gotten lost on some byway, lost on the mind road, and no problem. 1,000 mistakes, 10,000 mistakes. Our vow is to turn around, to remember. To remember what we love. And we come back once again to this precious moment that contains everything, past, present, future, everything right here. And the entry point is this repenting, this remembering, returning here. So all evil karma ever created by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, I vow to atone for it all. Thank you. My mistake. Please make yourselves comfortable. I was going to keep you uncomfortable. But now is the time for our Dharma dialogue. So questions, comments about this or about any aspect of practice that's rising for you.
Thank you so much, David, for that beautiful talk. I was quite struck by the phrase or the line as you sort of reinterpreted what this repentance can mean of turning our hearts toward the fullness of this moment. Often when I hear the word repentance, it's... for me, it triggers regret and guilt and all those emotions that I just rather would not have. Right? And sometimes the things that are troubling me, you know, even I'm sorry is not enough. Right? You know, as far as trying to, this, how to hold this repentance, right? Mm. How to really... And when you said that about... opening our hearts to the fullness of this moment. This really, I guess for me what arises is the phrase being willing to really feel that there's no making up for this.
Right.
You know, this was a failure. Right. There's no making up for this. And I forget which author it is that calls the rocks or the flag of permanent defeat. But I you know, that it kind of triggers the same thing for me of like really, really settling into, you know, no perfect Laura, no perfect human beings, and and vowing to atone for it all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for the talk. I'm curious about the word beginningless. I can't fathom it. Beginningless. Could you enlighten me?
That's on the 22nd. but that's, you know, David was sort of pointing to this in the beginning, the way that we do make time. You know, there's always his wonderful experience of not getting enlightened because he miscounted. That's such a great story. But we think, as human beings, we tend to think that things have a start somewhere. You know, like I can remember where this problem with this person started. It was when I said blah, blah, blah. Right? Or when he said blah, blah, blah. But this idea of beginningless is kind of cutting through that delusion that we could ever point to where the seeds of our greed, anger, and ignorance came from. And they're like, you know, according to the teachings, as I understand them, there's actually no way to get away from being greedy, angry, and ignorant. So probably even before we started speaking and thinking, we were greedy. Well, I know that. Have you ever seen a baby? Mm-hmm. Greedy. And they don't get what they want. They just scream, and then they get angry, and they're really, really ignorant for years. You know, sometimes they never get over it. But this is something that we can't point to the beginning of. And it's also endless. That's the other side of it. We can't point to the end of it. We'd like it. I would like it to end. I would like to stop being greedy, angry, and ignorant. That would be fine by me. But it hasn't happened yet, and I've never met anybody, even people who are treated as saints, perfected beings, never seen anyone who didn't demonstrate greed, anger, and ignorance at some point. So beginningless, endless. Yeah.
Right.
And it's in that vein, I vow to atone for it all. An impossible.
Yes.
An impossibility. It's like the vows, you know, that they're impossible to ever meet, you know, to ever fulfill. And yet, the feeling for me is that it invites me to be part of something bigger.
Yeah.
You know, the small I with its limitations will not be able to do it yet.
No.
There's something, an invitation to be part of something bigger that actually does the work for me.
And it's so interesting because I think we resist, the little I resists this invitation. Right, this wonderful invitation not to be stuck in I, me, mine, because it's painful, you know. But I love how you put that. Yeah, the invitation to be part of something bigger.
And you know, the guiding teachers actually debated the change to this a lot when we were coming up with this new liturgy book, and the idea that many of us objected to was, now I atone for it all. Done. Okay. It's over. Basta. No more suffering. Everything's cool. And I vow to atone for it all really connects to what we're saying. It's impossible. But if we say, now I atone for it all, what's next? What's on TV? Right? But oh, wow, this endless vow. So
let's sit for a few more breaths, and then we'll do our walking.